You are listening to the Cage Side Podcast, your home for in-depth analysis in the world of combat sports. And now, your host, Joshua Harper.
Well, the UFC is finally getting back into the swing of things. We've just had possibly one of the best fights of 2020. There hasn't been many fights. I mean, you've got the Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Zhang Weili fight, but this was a war. Like, this was just a flat-out war between one person, Dan Hooker, which a lot of people didn't expect to win this fight, and a lot of people didn't like due to his pre-fight talk, you could say. People didn't expect him to win, but wow, he put on a performance, and in my opinion, went toe-to-toe with one of the best boxers in the lightweight division, and that lightweight division is stacked. You then also had Mike Perry display a really good performance, considering he didn't have a coach behind him, which was insane. And then also you saw Maurice Greene with a submission coming after getting knocked down. He gets a submission win. That was a special win for him as well, especially now he's climbing up into that top 10 of the heavyweight division. There's a lot to discuss. We're going to talk about that fight card. We're also going to talk about UFC 251, sorry, that's coming up. Right, let's just talk about Dustin. I mean, if Dustin was just a bit more calm with his shots and he just placed them a bit better, and if he'd done what Conor McGregor done, which was basically plant his shots instead of just throwing them out there, because he's a crisp boxer, Dustin Poirier. We see it with his shots. He's very crisp, but sometimes he can get a bit too wild, and that's where he sort of struggled against McGregor. That's where he struggled against Justin Gaethje. If he was just a bit calmer and he just placed his shots, he could easily have knocked Dan Hooker out. And don't get me wrong, Dan Hooker's chin was bloody tested that night. It was a great win for Dustin Poirier, but it's so hard to really say where he's going to go next, because he's literally 9 months ago, his last fight was a convincing loss. You could say a convincing loss to Khabib Nurmagomedov, who is still the champion, who now has to face an interim champion in Justin Gaethje, let alone the Tony Ferguson fight that we all want as the fans. And then also you got the money fight in Conor McGregor. He's going to really struggle to get another shot at Khabib. He's going to struggle, but we'll have to really see how it goes from there. Let's just talk about the fight, first of all, with Dan Hooker. So, I'm just running through the stats here. What I did like about Poirier was his submission attempts. I think he went for an omoplata at one point, and it was like he was trying every... It's sort of like he had a major urge to win, and win convincingly. And he just had this drive to win. It was really, really, really good. And tell you what, if he'd done them submission attempts a bit earlier on, let's say he got taken down and he tried them attempts earlier on, he wouldn't have been as tired, it wouldn't have been as slippery. I think he would have definitely had a bit more success. And then, you know what? I think he would have maybe had a submission win here. I like Dan Hooker going to the body. We're not going to just talk about Poirier. I'm going to talk about what I liked about Dan Hooker. He was not scared to go to the body, and I like that. I like that a lot. But sometimes it was getting a bit, okay, you need to sort of put that back, because an uppercut could be coming, and it didn't. I thought Dustin Poirier should definitely look at that uppercut, and he never really even, I don't even think he attempted one uppercut in that fight. Maybe he did, but I don't remember seeing an uppercut in that fight. And I thought, if you just got an uppercut as soon as it was coming down to the body and you telegraphed it perfectly, it would have been lights out, because momentum would have been on his side, and that would have been Dustin Poirier good night. Dan Hooker went to the body though. I liked it a lot. I liked when he was moving combinations. at a quick rate to the body. So like he'd go to the body and then go upstairs and go to the body and then throw a few leg kicks. Whereas Dustin Poirier is more head hunting. He was looking for a knockout and he was looking for the head. One thing I didn't like with Dan Hooker, when he sort of busted his load almost and he got tired, and at the fifth round he was just takedown attempt after takedown attempt that just, it would either end in a guillotine attempt by Dustin Poirier, or it would just be stuffed. So Dan Hooker sort of went out too quick in the first round, thinking he's just going to try and knock out Dustin Poirier, which is fair enough. I don't believe Dustin Poirier's chin is his best weapon. I don't think it's his, that's a weak point of Dustin Poirier. He can be knocked out. We've seen that throughout his career. But he's just busted his load too much. And when you don't have the power to knock someone out, you sort of got to pick your shots rather than just go for the knockout when there's a big chance you won't actually knock him out. And he didn't really have a good game plan coming in terms of basically predicting where to strike and predicting where to go. One thing I did like though was body shots. Body shots I loved. Significant strikes, let's look at that. Significant strikes were even. Actually, two more goes to Dan Hooker. But total strikes went to Dustin Poirier. As I said, there was 9 takedown attempts from Dan Hooker. Only 4 were succeeded, but about 2 of them, maybe 3 actually, guillotine attempts. And basically, Dan Hooker ended up worse off going for the takedown. I liked that Dustin Poirier went in range. I liked he was going in range and he wasn't really staying at distance. He was coming in close. And I think against the cage, Dustin Poirier was struggling. But when he went up into the middle of the cage and basically pressured Dan Hooker didn't really have an answer. Doesn't really have the footwork to answer like a Justin Gaethje does or a Tony Ferguson would have. Great win. That's what I thought of that fight. What would I like to see next from Dustin Poirier? Well, let's look at this lightweight division, because obviously we've got Tony Ferguson there, which would be a great fight actually. You know what, I think I might actually pick that. So you've got Justin Gaethje, who's number 1 interim, then you've got 2 Tony Ferguson, then you've got 3 Dustin Poirier, who will probably go up to number 2 now actually. He might do. I mean, I don't know about that, actually. Then you've got McGregor, Dan Hooker, Paul Felder, Charles Oliveira, Kevin Lee, blah, blah, blah. I think Dustin Poirier versus McGregor or Ferguson would be nice. Personally, I would like to see Poirier versus Ferguson, just because that's a fight that sort of intrigues me, almost. I think two different styles. It's Dustin Poirier versus Max Holloway will be very similar. He'll have a very similar game plan against Tony Ferguson. I like to see that fight, especially with Dustin Poirier. He's not a jiu-jitsu specialist, but he would be able to compete with Tony Ferguson. Do I think he would win in a jiu-jitsu match? Absolutely not. But do I think he can compete? Absolutely. I like that fight. But I don't believe Conor McGregor's retired, by the way, so that's why I'm mentioning McGregor. Dustin Poirier versus McGregor would be a great fight. I think that's a fight at 155. That's a fight where McGregor can go, right, if I beat Poirier, I'm in line for a title shot. And do you know what? He would be. And I'm not a McGregor fanboy at all. I'd rather see Tony Ferguson versus Habib. But if McGregor beats Poirier, that's a great fight. That's a great fight for McGregor to come back and sort of reclaim what he's after, which is a belt. He wants to just run in and get a title shot, McGregor, but he can't because he's only had a 170 fight against an old and battered cowboy. Coming up against Dustin Poirier, who's just beaten Dan Hooker, who's just come off a title fight against Habib, that's a fight where you can go, right, at 155, he's a contender. And I actually think McGregor would win that fight, even by watching the Dan Hooker fight. Because I saw one punch where he was just, when Dustin Poirier just went swinging with a left hook, or I don't know, it was one hook. He let it swing in with a hook. McGregor would just pull back, counter, and that big left would come over and it would knock him out. And listen, not a McGregor fanboy. Actually, I like Dustin Poirier. I think McGregor would I think McGregor would lose to Tony Ferguson. I think McGregor would lose to Gaethje, and I think McGregor would lose to Nurmagomedov. But this fight against Dustin Poirier, it's a great fight if the UFC want him to come back and win. I think he wins this. As for Dan Hooker, well, the Paul Felder fight had some controversy. The Paul Felder fight had a lot of controversy. A lot of people thought Paul Felder would have won on the judges. Paul Felder sent out a tweet saying he would come out of retirement to fight one of them two. Obviously, I don't think Paul Felder is going to fight Dustin Poirier. I think that's a bit ridiculous, to say the least. I mean, the rematch, Hooker versus Felder, is a great fight. Hooker versus Felder. You've really also got, you know what, Hooker versus Gregor Gillespie. That's an interesting fight. Gregor hasn't been seen since the Kevin Lee knockout. I don't know if Islam Makhachev has a fight, but he could also fight Islam Makhachev on the Justin Gaethje versus Nurmagomedov card. You got Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje. Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier. I like that fight. I like it a lot. Yeah, that's what I would like to see, to be honest. Right, as for UFC 251. Actually, should we talk about Mike Perry? Yeah, let's talk about Mike Perry. Why not? We're only 10 minutes in. Mike Perry put on a weird performance. Do you know what? I walked in and I thought, you know what? If this goes to the ground, there's a chance. There's a small chance that Mickey Gall would be able to basically slap on a submission and end it. It's a small chance. And then that small chance got even bigger. And I was thinking, you know what? He could win this if he just took him down. He's a very big underdog, Mickey Gall. And I thought, you know, I'm going to put some money on that. I didn't put any money on it, but I thought, you know, I might put some money on it. Lucky I didn't, because, wow, Mike Perry. I mean, what more can you really say about the guy? The guy showed that he's not just a brawler. He's not just all out there just going to smash and bang. He's not going to bang. He's also going to basically, I don't want to say it was a technical masterpiece, because it wasn't. It was just a very well-rounded, performance by Mike Perry. It was well-rounded. I liked he threw a few leg kicks, and I think that was hindering Mike and Mickey Gall moving forward. I liked the teep. There's a few things I liked about it. I like Mike Perry in the clinch as well. Mike Perry in the clinch. And I also like the confidence of Mike Perry to stay on the ground with Mickey Gall and throw a good amount of strikes on the ground against someone who's a brown belt. I really didn't expect that. I'm not going to lie. I didn't expect Mickey Gall to just basically lay there. It seemed like Mickey Gall got tired very quick as well. It seemed like Mickey Gall just fatigued at the late second, third round. I mean, what do you do with Mike Perry at the end of the day? What do you... The Robbie Lawler fight, maybe? Listen, Robbie Lawler hasn't been seen since the Colby Covington fight. Yeah, you could do that. It would be one of them fights where they're going to try and kill each other. Great fight by Mike Perry. He's looking to find a camp, which is great. He's obviously left Jackson Wink. Again, what camp would you like to see him in? I don't know. American Top Team is good. I think he's moving to Florida, so American Top Team would be a good shout. He could train with a lot of great boxers, great wrestlers, great jiu-jitsu artists. You've got that. You could train Dustin Poirier, and you know what? That they're very similar in their styles. Very, very not short, stocky, and try and throw leather. And I think that'd be interesting to see him train with someone like Dustin Poirier. Alright, let's talk about UFC 251 now, because that card is insane. This isn't going to be my breakdown. This is just going to be me just basically talking about it. We got a great card. We've got a really good card, especially for the first Fight Island card. You've got Volkan Uzdemir on the prelims main event. Like, that's Volkan fought for the title only 2 years. Was it 2 years? It might have been more actually, because early 2018. Yeah, it would have been. So about 2.5 years ago. I mean, it's a former title contender here. Again, I don't know who's finally fine. Jiří Prochaska. I don't know much about him. I'm guessing he's Polish. Let's find out more about him. He's a Czech. Oh, he's a Czech. Czech Republic. He's from the Czech Republic. He's a former Ryzen. Oh, he's. Hold on. He's a former champion of Ryzen. Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. Well, this is going to be interesting, actually. Wow. I do actually want to look into this guy. He fought CB Dolloway. He fought King Mo. He's fought some guys and he's beaten them. Huh? Okay. You know what? I'm gonna have to watch that. I'm gonna look out for that. That looks interesting. So yeah, you got. I'm guessing this is is his debut coming from Ryzen. That's gonna be interesting. That fight is something I'm gonna look out for, and I suggest you two do. Where's the whole card? Where's the whole card? I'm trying to find the whole card. Because you've really got a card here that sort of is displaying what the UFC has to offer, sort of where three divisions are going to go in the future. I mean, you've got the bantamweight, featherweight, and welterweight. Where it's going to go in the future? So on the main card, I mean, so you got Amanda Ribas versus Paige VanZant. So this is Paige VanZant's last fight on her UFC contract, and more than likely she's going to join her husband in Bellator. She's a weird one, isn't she? Because she's not the best at all. But what she is she, let's just say it outright, she basically has this drawing power just because of how fit she is. So based on her looks, she can draw people in. She's got whatever, Instagram followers, whatever. She's basically sort of transcending the sport, because that's like Conor McGregor and all these greats. Because you're not going to say about Paige VanZant, but what she's doing is basically transcending the sport. Because other people are looking in thinking, oh, okay, she's fit, I'm going to watch her fight. So she's actually transcending the sport, not like Conor McGregor at all. Very different reasons, but she's transcending the sport. So she has got a moderate drawing power. I don't want to say she's drawing in like hundreds of thousands, because she's not. But she does draw attention to the UFC. She does give something to look at. And I think that's what the UFC need to think when they're coming in. Right, listen, she ain't the best. Is she ever going to be champion? No. But we have a star here, sort of. We have a star. Let's try and build her as pretty much, let's just say outright, pretty much like a WWE diva, like when they were divas back in the day and not women, when they were just objects. Do that. Just do that. Try and sell her a bit more. But let her do these photo shoots. Let her go on these magazines or interviews or whatever with, like, I don't know, Logan Paul. I think she done an interview with Logan Paul. Let her do that. Because she's going to draw attention to her fights. And then they're going to see, oh, Paige VanZant's fighting. Oh, she's fit. I'm going to watch her. And then they're going to see later Petr Yan versus Jose Aldo. And think, fuck. Wait, this is a great fight. I want to watch this. And all of a sudden, they'll be watching more and more and more. Until basically Paige VanZant isn't even in their head. So that's what I think about the Paige VanZant thing. Do I think she's the best? Fuck no. Do I think she's really Do I think she deserves to be in the UFC? I'm going to say yes. I think she deserves to be in the UFC. But I don't think she's... I don't think she's main card worthy. I think the Volkan Uzdemir fight would be ahead of this fight if Paige VanZant was... Let's just say outright, a little bit uglier. Let's just say outright, if she's a bit uglier, she'd probably be on the prelims. And Volkan would go up. So that's what I think of that. Do I think it's right? No, I'm not a feminist by all means. I am definitely not. But at the end of the day, you have to look and think, you know what, I've got a weapon here. I've got a weapon. It's sad to call someone... all the feminists, please don't come at me, okay? I'm just saying it as business. This is what businesses would see, and this is what all businesses do. They, with all staff, they have a great member of staff. They've got a great weapon in their arsenal. Paige VanZant is that weapon. She can easily sell a fight by just going on a photo shoot or doing stuff like that. And that's what I think. Who do I think will win? I don't know much about Amanda Ribas, to be honest. Who's Amanda Ribas for? So she's for Margaret Mackenzie Dern. Oh, she fought Mackenzie Dern. When was that? I think I remember that now. Or do I? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know when that was. But she's beaten Mackenzie Dern, which was interesting. And she got a few takedowns against Mackenzie Dern. Was there any submission attempts? No. And let's not get this straight. Mackenzie Dern is a submission specialist. And to not get submitted by Mackenzie Dern is accomplishment. A very big accomplishment. Yeah, actually, you know what? I'm going to go Amanda Ribas just because she had two takedowns against Mackenzie Dern and stuffed six takedowns. So she got 100% of her takedowns too. She also stuffed six of Mackenzie Dern's takedowns. Okay. I think Mackenzie Dern did come back from pregnancy though. I'm pretty sure. I don't know. Don't know about that actually. I think so. So you know what? Yeah, I'm gonna go Amanda Ribas just because of that. And actually, I think that's kind of a strategic game for UFC to basically give Paige VanZant Amanda Ribas, she also goes for submissions as well. Okay, there was a statement about Amanda Ribas. What happened? Oh, did she test positive? Right, yeah. Okay. Announced today, Amanda Ribas is entitled to a reduction of her original 2-year suspension. Test positive for estrogen. I don't know. Ostrin? Following an outcome. Okay, so she tested positive, and she has a flag under the USADA. So USADA's popped her, which is a bit interesting. Okay. I'm gonna go Amanda Ribas just because of that, but I think UFC should give Paige VanZant a new contract and try and sign her up big time. Because what I've just said there is what the UFC should be doing. And at some respect, she is sort of transcending the sport. She could transcend it even more. Even more she could transcend it if she's just promoted properly. Now, she isn't going to win all her fights, but she can be like... consider her like a ring girl almost. So she's there to basically bring eyes to the next fight that's coming up, which is the actual women's MMA masterclass, which is Rose Namajunas, one of the quickest mixed martial artists I've possibly ever seen. I think I'll say that outright, versus Jessica Andrade. So I didn't watch their first fight. I'm not gonna lie. I live in England. It is a pain to watch UFC events. I watch every single one, but this one I didn't because I think I was ill, and obviously I was just throwing up at 4 a.m. I couldn't really watch this fight. But wow, we saw Rose, who, by the way, just beaten Joanna Jędrzejczyk twice, which is mental, and come out, and then she gets beaten by Jessica Andrade, who then Jessica Andrade gets beaten by Zhang Weili. So this one's interesting because they're very similar. Not similar, they're very similar, but have a lot of different... lot of different techniques that are better than the other. So number one, as I said, Rose is a lot quicker. Rose is a lot quicker. Whereas Jessica Andrade is probably got... She's got more power. She's probably maybe 25-30% stronger than Rose Namajunas. However, they both have great submission games. I think Rose uses it more heavy, because she isn't like the strongest, hasn't got the knockout power. So if she can get a takedown, she'll look to go for a submission, and she'll look to go for one maybe every single fight. I think the Joanna fights were obviously not, because they were just ended with these. And you know what? Me saying she hasn't got that much knockout power is actually kind of sad, because she did knock out Joanna Jędrzejczyk twice. But I'm not determining that due to her power. I'm determining that to her speed. She's quick. Very, 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 very quick. Her footwork is insane. And that, in my opinion, will win her this fight. I watched replays of the fight. She was winning the fight against Jessica Andrade until she got basically a suplex to the head, if I remember. What was it, last year? A suplex to the head, pretty much, and landed, nearly broke her neck. She's winning the fight, though. She's winning the fight. So, in my opinion, is she going to be able to take down Jessica Andrade? No, but she needs to do what she done against Joanna, which was quick footwork, move around. Basically, Jessica will sort of struggle to find a shot, because Jet Rose will be moving just quick and quick and quickly. And at that point, Rose will just be laying on the punches, quick, quick, quick. Will not be staying still, constantly moving. And I believe Rose will get the win. And you know what? I believe it'll be a decision, because it's only 3 rounds. If it was 5 rounds, I would probably go Rose for a decision. Rose for a knockout, sorry. But because it's 3 rounds, I reckon they're going to try and go the full three rounds. All right, next we got Petr Yan versus Jose Aldo. I suppose this is a breakdown, by the way. I'm not going to be doing another breakdown because I'm basically breaking it down right now. Got Petr Yan, or Petr Yan versus Jose Aldo. So Jose Aldo was the person who lost to Marlon Moraes, for all the casuals out there. Am I surprised he's getting this shot? No, I'm not. Because that fight was meant to be, the winner of that would go to the title. But Marlon won, but there was a lot of controversy surrounding it. I believe Marlon won. I thought Marlon Moraes won. I don't understand how anyone saw any differently. But Jose Aldo gets the shot basically because in his contract, he came back to fight Henry Cejudo. And Henry Cejudo retired, so he gets a title shot under his contract. And also Marlon Moraes did fight for the title before beating Jose Aldo, so it was a bit of a hard sell to really put Marlon straight into that title shot. Now, let's just run through Petr Yan's history. The guy beat Uriah Faber in a late knockdown. And when I say a late knockdown, it was a late knockout. And I was so shocked because he was just piping Uriah Faber up for 3 rounds. And then it was almost like he decided, right, I want a knockout. So he just went 100% and went for the knockout, and he got it. He then also went 3 rounds and got the decision against Riviera. And Riviera is someone who's got great cardio and has great wrestling. Now, At the end of the day, did I expect Riviera to win? No. There was a lot of hype in PTN. A lot of hype. Did I really actually expect PTN to sort of... I don't want to say dominate because he wasn't, but how his strikes were was basically... It was a war. It was a really good fight. And all his strikes sort of landed with conviction. I think he got about 5 knockdowns. Let me look at the actual stats of that fight against Jimmy Riviera. So yeah, he got 4 knockdowns. 4 knockdowns with 112 strikes, may I say. Okay. And that's good. That is very, very good. 3 rounds, 4 knockdowns. That is basically, let's just say outright, it's a knockdown every round. 2 in 1. So, insane. He also got 2 takedowns, which I remember Jimmy Riviera getting back up and sort of getting advantage of it. I think he passed guard twice. Jimmy Riviera passed guard twice. And Jimmy Riviera has got great, great, great ground game. But it seems like Peter Yan has this power and has this sort of... He every strike he throws lands with conviction. It sort of lands like he's trying to knock someone out. He's also beaten John Dodson. And that was all in 2019, by the way. That was all in 2019. Beating legends. So, at the end of the day, I thought Peter Yan basically gets that title shot. I thought it would be Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling before Aljamain beat Corey Sandhagen. I thought that would be the fight. That's the fight to make. And obviously that didn't because of Jose Aldo's contract. And then you got Jose Aldo, who basically fought at 135 once. Since his return, I think he's actually fought at 135 before. I'm actually not too sure about that. I think he might have before in WEC. I think he might have fought at 135. So he fought Volkanovski, lost. He fought Marlon Moraes, lost. Both decision fights. Controversy in the Moraes one. A lot of people thought Aldo won. No controversy in the Volkanovski one, but it was in a different weight class. I have no clue how he's getting his title shot. I don't know why they put it in his contract, but there we go. With the Aldo Moraes fight, which was at 245, that's mental. That wasn't long ago, really. 6 months ago, but it doesn't feel like long ago. It's going to be 7 months, actually, by the time UFC 251 pops around. So, it's a very even fight. But Marlon Moraes got the knockdown. I don't know how he's getting his title shot. I'm looking through his stats. He got a knockdown and he got a takedown. Or was it a knockdown? If I remember, was it a knockdown? Was it a knockdown? I don't think it was. I think he just got staggered. I'm still struggling to believe how he's getting his title fight. Anyway, Jose Aldo at 135. He was known for his speed at 145. At 135, he's got to be a lot quicker because he's not going to be holding too much water weight. It's going to be a lot quicker. However, he's cutting weight, so that's going to be harder to go 5 rounds. And Jose Aldo's chin has basically vanished. So against Peter Yan, that's going to be a problem. It's going to be a big problem. So at this point, I can't even analyze this fight because Jose Aldo dropping to 135. He did look good, fair enough, for 135. But he's not even that old. But he's sort of... His fight career age, he's about 50. He's old for his fight career. His chin's gone. He's been knocked out numerous times. He's had a lot of wars. And at this point in his career, someone like Peter Yan's gonna really, really end him up and butcher him. So, in my opinion, this is going to be a Yan win. And do you know what? I think it's going to be a second or third round knockout. I am leaning towards a second round knockout. And do you know what? I think it's going to be a brutal knockout. it'll be a brutal knockout. The one thing I'd say for Jose Aldo to use in this fight is leg kicks. I don't think anyone's really sort of used any leg kicks to Petr Yan, and Jose Aldo has lethal leg kicks. Someone like Jimmy Rivera, someone like Uriah Faber hasn't got that same oomph with their leg kicks that Jose Aldo does, and that could be a real determining factor in whether Jose Aldo does get the win. But I just can't see it going any other way at all. That's right. So we have Volkanovski. Oh, there's my throat. By the way, I've got a bad throat. Volkanovski versus Max Holloway, the rematch. So, I don't know. I believe I've talked about this before. I believe I talked about this fight and I ran through it. I don't know if I have actually done a run through of this card, because I'm sort of getting full deja vu. I'm going to look at my podcast analytics, because I'm pretty sure I have actually... No, I haven't talked about it. Maybe I've done a podcast beforehand and I just scrapped it. So, Volkanovski Holloway, the first fight, which was at, again, 245, I think. Yeah, it was. I expected Volkanovski to win. I thought Volkanovski was going to win. I thought his wrestling, I thought in terms of his speed, I think it's going to be a struggle to really put on the pressure, the Holloway pressure that he is used to. So against someone like Max Holloway, he had to be quick on his feet. He had to be moving around, and he had to be quick. And I think that was really the determining factor in that last fight. Let's just look at the stats here. So total strikes for Volkanovski were 157 to Max Holloway's 135. That is very, very unlikely of Max Holloway. And don't forget, this wasn't Max Holloway coming off the loss to Dustin Poirier. He actually beat Frankie Edgar before this fight. I thought Volkanovski was going to win. I can't say, I don't know why I thought Volkanovski was going to win. I just had an inkling. I thought this is someone really Volkanovski's never really fought. He's very different, because he's such an all-rounder. Volkanovski, as someone who came from rugby, he's such an all-rounder. His leg kicks in that fight were a big factor in basically that Holloway movement that he does, that Holloway pressure, because he's just going for leg kicks all day, and Holloway didn't want to walk into it, so he was like backing off, and we've never really saw Holloway back off like that before. So Volkanovski was putting on the pressure against Holloway. Never thought we'd see that, especially against the consensus best featherweight of all time. Holloway getting pushed back? Nah, surely not. The leg kicks were a big factor in that, and that is such a big weapon in the arsenal of Volkanovski. He tried to take down Max Holloway, but as we know, Max Holloway is the best, has got the best takedown defense, I believe, right now in the UFC. He's so good. He's so good at and for someone who's got quite short arms, he stuffs takedowns very quick and with ease. And I don't think that's to do with his strength. I think it's just to do with his body type almost. Like, he can stretch out and sprawl from standing up. He basically sprawls when he stands up, when he's standing up. Volkanovski just kept on with the leg kicks, and that was basically evaporating the movement of Max Holloway. Now, if you look back at my prior podcast beforehand, let's see if I can get up where I said that Max Holloway would lose to, here we go, there it is. Oh, there's 49 minutes, can't be bothered. Watch it. Watch the podcast. I said Volkanovski would win. And he did. And I think a lot of people didn't. I just saw it. I thought, you know what? Against Jose Aldo, he showed like this all-round, sort of similar to, and I don't want to say Frankie Edgar in the day, but, you know, yeah, sort of similar to Frankie Edgar. So, I just thought, this is going to be a problem. Now. I'm changing my mind on the whole thing. I've looked at every single direction of this fight. I believe Max Holloway's going to win. I think Max Holloway's going to know what Volkanovski's game plan with, and I think Volkanovski's going to go in with the same game plan. And he can't, because I think Max Holloway's going to look at the leg kicks and think, you know what, I'm going to find a different way around this, and not just check leg kicks, because he's just going to keep throwing them. I'm just going to try to sort of pressure him at a lineal stance. At a lineal stance and just apply pressure. Because he's a taller guy in there, a lot taller, but he hasn't got a reach advantage. In fact, Volkanovski's got a near 3-inch reach advantage. So staying at distance, just because you're the bigger man, doesn't mean anything. You need to be at near lineal stance and basically put pressure on him where the leg kicks won't find a way in. And push him against the cage and just strike every minute. And not giving him the time to throw leg kicks. Not giving him time. He's going to be too busy defending himself and throwing punches to counteract you. And that's what Holloway needs to do in his fight. And that's what I believe he will do. He's just going to go straight at the bell. He ain't going to stay at distance because he ain't got the reach advantage. Just because he's a bigger man doesn't mean anything. He's going to use his size to his advantage and sort of overwhelm Volkanovski. And that's what I see happening. Now, would I put money on Holloway winning? No, because it's such an even fight. I honestly believe Volkanovski has takedowns. Like, basically, it's like rugby. Like he can just take someone down with a spear and just spear through him. And it will be an ease of a takedown against anyone else apart from Max Holloway. He's got great takedowns. He's also got knockout power as well. He is a big... If you look at him at rugby days, he's a big man. He's got power. And he also can go 5 rounds. And he proved it going against someone who's got a gas tank. A cardiovascular machine like Max Holloway goes 5 rounds and beats him with ease. All-rounder, amazing. Pressure like we've never seen before. Diaz style Max Holloway, he needs to use it properly, and I think that's what we will see. I think we'll see him land so many strikes. I believe we'll see him land maybe near 10 strikes a minute and just keep blowing on the barrage of just strikes. And he's not just going to go head hunting like he did before. I don't see him doing that. I think he's going to go for the body as well and try and tire out Volkanovski. That's what I see happening. Listen, Max Holloway can take a punch, but he can't be too risky. I have said going in against Volkanovski has put on pressure and he has to come in with a near lineal stance and just bombard him. But he also has to be safe with it. He needs to put pressure on him, but safely. He needs to keep going, moving forward, but also remember to pull back. And also to remember to use head movement to his advantage. That's what I think of that. Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. Now, am I excited for this fight? I'm in so two minds about it. Because, listen, I'm a Masvidal fan. My first ever UFC live event I went to was Jorge Masvidal versus Darren Till. And since that day, Jorge Masvidal fan till I die. So... I'm always going to be a Jorge Masvidal fan. But Gilbert Burns has beaten Tyron Woodley. So it's hard to deny him from a title shot when he's just beaten the title holder for 5 fights. Who on his comeback fight is fighting you. And you beat him with ease. With ease. So Gilbert Burns, that's like his record. Because he's also fought a lightweight. People don't remember that. He fought lightweight. He beat Damian Maia at Brazil in the last UFC event before lockdown. He's also beaten... Wow. Wow. Okay. So he's also been Gunnar Nelson. Which is interesting, actually. So, as we know, Gilbert Burns is a jiu-jitsu artist. He's predominantly jiu-jitsu based. He's going to try and go for takedowns. He's going to try and submit you. And I think that's what we saw with the Gunnar Nelson fight. I think that's what we saw with Albin Mercier fight. Someone who basically prides himself on his jiu-jitsu. Now, since fighting Damian Maia, we've really seen, like, okay, he's got power as well, and a big ton of it. He sparked Damian Maia. He then basically, for five rounds, dominated the most dominant, one of them, the second most dominant welterweight title holder of all time. Do I think this fight is going to be competitive? Absolutely. Do I think Burns going to win? No. No, I don't. I think Kamaru Usman is the bigger man in there by a big margin. I think the reach, the 5-inch reach advantage, Kamaru Usman isn't going to go in range. And even if Gilbert Burns tries to, he's either going to be met with a big uppercut, which he tried to against Colby Covington, or he's just going to be clinched. And I don't think Gilbert Burns is going to deal well with a clinch unless he goes down to the ground. I don't think he'll do well with the clinch. Now, if they're both on the ground, let's say Kamaru Usman or Gilbert Burns took each other down, I think the advantage goes to Gilbert Burns. I honestly do. I think he could slap on a submission, and I think it could be over. But again, it don't start on the ground, and I think he ain't gonna be able to take down Kamaru Usman, because Kamaru Usman's just too strong, too big, and I think it'll just be easy. I think it'd be easy, actually. You know what I'm gonna say? I think it'd be easy for Kamaru Usman. He won't be able to get taken down. I believe Kamaru Usman will try and clinch him up, very similar to what he's done against Tyron Woodley, because Gilbert Burns, like he done against Tyron Woodley, is very quick, very on it, loads of combos. He can't do what he done with Colby Covington, because Colby Covington doesn't have power. He's just got a gas tank and a barrage of strikes, and he'll just keep throwing and throwing and throwing. Gilbert Burns hasn't really been, at welterweight at least, hasn't really been gassed out. And he did go five rounds against Tyron Woodley. But at five rounds, he was controlling the pace. Gilbert Burns was controlling the pace in that fight. He could have slowed down when he wanted to, which he did, I believe, in the middle of the third round. He can control the pace. Against Kamaru Usman, he's not. Because Kamaru Usman is going to put the pressure, whereas Tyron Woodley is the opposite of that and will let you control the fight. Now, Kamaru Usman is the bigger man, got the bigger reach, is a stronger man. I'm going to say is the better technical striker. It's kind of even, their striking, actually. I'll say it's even. I'd give the advantage to Kamaru Usman personally, because I think he's just got a bit more power, and I think he's quite technical with it. But Gilbert Burns has speed as an advantage, but that speed will just be met with a clinch, and it will try and push him against the cage. So, how do I see this fight going? I see this going five rounds, either way. I see this going five rounds either way. If Gilbert Burns wins, it's going to be a decision. If Kamaru Usman wins, it's going to be a decision. I'm going to say Kamaru Usman. I think Kamaru Usman's going to actually have fun with this fight. He's going to dominate. And I'm not a Kamaru Usman fan at all. I do not like Kamaru Usman. I think he... Do you know what? I'm not going to say I don't like him. I do. I think I respect him. It's different. I don't like him as a fighter. I think he's quite boring. I think he's quite cringy. But I respect him because of how good he is. You have to respect how good he is. And that's what I'm doing here. I'm respecting how good he actually is. But I don't like him. But I do respect the two fights. The Colby Covington fight and the Jorge Masvidal fight. Both fights. And I'm a Jorge Masvidal fan. Don't get me wrong. Both fights weren't his fault. Both fights he wanted. He didn't try and... People were blaming him for the contract. But no, it's Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington's. It was all them. So I do respect Kamaru Usman. Do I like him? No. Do I think Jorge Masvidal would win? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, we will see the best Kamaru Usman we've ever seen against Gilbert Burns. I think Kamaru Usman is just going to have fun with this fight. And I think it'll be a decision, but I think it'll be a... Early on, Gilbert Burns will have success. I reckon the first and second round, Gilbert Burns will have success. Then the late second round on, third, fourth, fifth, Kamaru Usman's just going to still be there. He won't be moving back like Tyron Woodley. He'll be moving forward. And Gilbert Burns will be like, fuck, he's a big man. He's a lot bigger than me. I'm going to struggle. That's what I think. Listen, I might be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll happily eat my words, but I just see this being another victim for Usman. Right, now, that's enough of that. Let's just quickly run through the events we have upcoming. We have quite a lot of good cards. Let's just look at the next fight night. We have Cater versus Ike. That again, Calvin Cater, his performance against who did he fight? Was it Jeremy? Yeah, it was Jeremy Stevens at UFC 249. I think it was. It was impeccable. And I've always said Calvin Cater is possibly the most crisp striker in the featherweight division right now. And if he beats Dan Ike, Calvin Cater has to be in shout of the winner of Aldo and Jermaine Sterling. But then PC Yan and Aldo. But then you've got Zabit, who beat Calvin Cater. You've also got Aljamain Sterling. You've also got Cody Garbrandt there. You've got one division. Now, this featherweight division is stacked. It is getting stacked. I'm not going to lie. Calvin Cater has really got a chance to get, if he beats Dan Ike, who's just beaten, by the way, Edson Barboza, one of the most fierce strikers in lightweight history, I'm going to say. He's in contention with a title shot. Now, obviously, you've got Zabit, who beat Calvin Cater, so he's obviously going to be ahead of Calvin Cater, but Calvin Cater's been more active. Well, he has been more active, but Zabit only fought, 5 months, 6 months ago? So he hasn't been inactive at all. He's just, I think you've got to blame lockdown for that. I think he's fighting in August, actually. So, really, this division's going to be held up, because you've got Zabit versus, I believe, Yair Rodriguez. So the winner of that's going to be fine for the title. And then you got Brian Ortega versus a Korean Zombie. And then you got Frankie Edgar, who's fighting on the same card. Who's Frankie Edgar fighting? Frankie Edgar's fighting Pedro Munoz. Oh, Frankie Edgar's gone down. Frankie Edgar's gone down to bantamweight to fight Pedro Munoz. Okay, so again, bantamweight, one of the most stacked divisions there is. And with Frankie Edgar in the fold, that's, again, even more stacked. So, you've got Calvin Cater, Yair Rodriguez, Zabit, Brian Ortega, Korean Zombie, and you've also got Volkanovski and Holloway fighting for the title. That division's stacked. Stacked. So, yeah, I believe Calvin Cater does beat Dan Ike. And I think it's going to be by a knockout in maybe the third round, maybe fourth. I think it'll be a late knockout. But again, Calvin Cater won't be getting a title shot because he has lost to Zabit only, 8 months ago? 7 months ago? So he's not going to get a title shot, which is sad because, listen, he's one of the best there is at featherweight. But he's just going to have to wait for Zabit and Yair and then Zabit to fight for the title and blah, blah, blah. Pedro Munoz versus Frankie Edgar again. Frankie moving down to bantamweight. If you didn't watch the Joe Rogan podcast with... George Lockhart, he said Frankie Edgar could go down to flyweight. So Frankie Edgar, bantamweight, you know what, I'm excited. And Pedro Munhoz is a tough customer. I mean, Pedro Munhoz starched Cody Garbrandt, who Cody Garbrandt looked very good in his fight. Who did Cody Garbrandt fight? He only fought a couple of weeks ago. Cody Garbrandt looking good. I forgot who he fought. Who did Cody Garbrandt fight? Rafael Assuncao, that's who he fought. And Rafael Assuncao has been around for ages. He's one of them. He's like the gatekeeper for that division. He's never held a title, but he's a gatekeeper. You beat him, you're in line for a title shot. So that's a great fight. Then you've got Carlos Esparza. Carlos Esparza, who's just beaten Michelle Watson. And Michelle Watson, who just came from a Joanna Jędrzejczyk war, you could say. That was a very good fight. Carlos Esparza beating her is now fighting Marina Rodriguez. Again, interesting fight. Good card. I'm going to watch it. Tim Elliott's on the card now. Didn't Tim Elliott just fight a couple of weeks ago? Pretty sure he did. I'm pretty sure he did. Hold on. So. So, yeah. Tim Elliott he fought the guy from PFL, I believe. Rival. Lost by submission. And he's just come straight back. It was a 3-round fight, by the way. So, he's obviously cleared. He's fighting Ryan Benoit. Chris Benoit. Ryan Benoit. 10-6. I'm surprised he's actually just came straight back and fight. Okay. Again, interesting. Interesting. Tim Elliott's come back straight out of that loss. Fair enough. I mean, you've got to respect it. You've got to respect it at all. So what else we got? You then got Figueiredo versus Benavidez. Now, there was a whole problem with Figueiredo not making weight, winning the fight, and he obviously couldn't get the title, so they're going to do the rematch, which is interesting, because Benavidez basically gets the second shot. But if Benavidez does win, I do see a lot of criticism coming. I saw a lot of criticism coming his way anyway, whereas basically Benavidez didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, he lost. Do I think he deserves an immediate rematch? No. I don't actually. I don't believe he deserves to fight for the title straight away. But just because of how that division is very weak. It's a very weak division. There's not a lot of contenders in there. And Figueiredo's been around for a while and beating pretty much everyone in that division. You really only got them two to fight. Do I see it going any other way? Benavidez? I'll go into the fight. A breakdown of that fight, of this whole fight week in Fight Island, so I don't need to go into it now, but yeah, it's a title fight, isn't it? It's a title fight, but it's just not one that really excites me, because I've just only seen it a couple months ago. I believe this is my main event, Kelvin Gastelum versus Jack Hermanson. What a fight. I mean, Kelvin coming off the loss to Darren Till at UFC 244. So he hasn't fought since November. And Kelvin Gastelum obviously fighting for the title. Had that war with Israel Adesanya. He's got to be in the mix. He's such a great talent. Has to be in the mix. And then Jack Hermanson, who lost to Jannir Cannonier. Is it Jannir? I think it's Jannir Cannonier. That was interesting, because I think we saw Cannonier as a real contender after beating Jack Hermanson. When Jack Hermanson beat Jack Ray Sousa, David Branch. He earned his right into that top five. He earned his right into that top five, being Jack Ray and David Branch. But at the end of the day, I don't want to go into the breakdown yet. Jannir Cannonier was really the antidote. Jared Cannonier, that's it. Just make sure I get his real name right, because it wasn't Jannir. Jared Cannonier. He really did show that Jack Hermanson's chinny. He can be caught. And And I think Thiago Santos also showed that in their fight, which was ages ago. He can be caught, and he can be caught early. And Kelvin has so much power at welterweight, at middleweight, sorry. I mean, coming up from welterweight, when he came up from welterweight, he had power there. But now he's a whole nother beast. He is a scary man. He's a knockout artist. And that's why Darren Till was so cautious of him. He's got a major reach advantage over Jacob Hansen. But listen, the winner of that fight is straight up there. He is straight up there. Because if Kelvin wins, I see Kelvin Gastelum versus Jared Cannonier in the near future. Mark DeCasey's fighting. Mark DeCasey, Jesus. That name's been around for a while. So you got that. That's the end of the Fight Island. It won't be the end of Fight Island, because I think that's going to be around for another couple of months after it is first introduced. Actually, no, it's not. Because Whittaker Till is on Fight Island, isn't it? So we've got Whittaker Till. I was meant to go and watch this fight, by the way, at UFC Dublin. I was going to fly out to Dublin and go. Obviously, that isn't happening. So you've got Shogun Hua versus Antonio Nogueira. So that's just a classic fight for the old-timers. You've got Alex Oliveira. Oh, Alex Oliveira is a killer, man. At welterweight, he's a killer. You got Danny Roberts. Welterweight, he's a English guy, so I watched him at UFC London, and I don't remember who he fought, but I believe he got tapped out. I believe he got a submission loss. He's fine. And then you know what, this fight, in my opinion, is the, listen, I love Whittaker Till, and you know what, it's a contender. This should be the co-main event, in my opinion. Fabricio Werdum, who did just lose to Olenek, is fighting Alexander Gustafsson in his heavyweight debut. Oh! So you got Gustafsson, who is a crisp boxer, versus Werdum, who is a submission specialist. Gustafsson has great wrestling. Werdum can also strike. I mean, I knocked out Cain Velasquez. He can strike. So, in my opinion, that should be the co-main event. That's a great fight. That is a great fight. But then you got Whittaker versus Till. And if Till beats Whittaker, you're gonna see Darren Till versus either Israel Adesanya or Paulo Costa after them two fight. I guarantee it. Because Till's money for the UK. Till is money. If he wins a middleweight championship, like, that is, ooh, that is similar to Michael Bisping levels. Like, they're gonna want to recreate that. So that's great card, July 26th. That's actually just under a month away, about a month away. And then the announcement that, oh, the guy who got me into MMA, well, CM Punk got me into MMA. Realistically, that's the whole story to get into another day. But the first real event I saw was Cormier versus Jones. Big Cormier fan till I die. Love Cormier. He's getting his chance to avenge his loss and go for the trilogy against Stipe Miocic. Great fight. Can't wait to watch that. I will be watching that live. Stipe Miocic, Daniel Cormier. If it's in the smaller cage, which a lot of speculation is it's going to be, we're going to maybe see Daniel Cormier use his wrestling, which I was shouting for in the second fight. He just didn't even attempt a takedown. I was like, why? I believe he was winning the first three rounds. I don't want to be biased, but I thought he was winning the first three rounds. He was dominating that fight, in my opinion. And if he just took him down, he would have had him. Such a shame. But at the end of the day, I'm looking forward to that fight card. I mean, I hope they stack it out. I hope we see another title fight on there. I hope we see maybe the, will they put the middleweight? Will they put Adesanya on the co-main? I don't think they're going to put Adesanya on the co-main. I doubt it. They might put the featherweight, and then they won't. Who would they put on it? Can't put lightweight. Welterweight, they can't really do. Middleweight, they won't do. Light heavyweight, Ah, that's probably what they're gonna do. They're gonna strip John Jones, or they're gonna work it out with John Jones, one of the two. It's gonna probably be Dominic Reyes versus either Thiago Santos or Jan Blachowicz. That is what's gonna happen. I guarantee it. That light heavyweight championship. And you know, I don't think John Jones is gonna be on the co-main, though. I don't think John Jones is gonna take a co-main. So it will either be a really good co-main, like a Tony Ferguson versus Dustin Poirier, or a Colby Covington versus a Tyron Woodley. Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington. Or it will be a light heavyweight championship fight between Dominic Reyes or Thiago Santos or Jan Blachowicz, one of them three. So yeah, anyway, thanks for listening to the podcast. Be sure to subscribe. I will be doing another podcast probably after UFC 251, where we run through what we see. Can't wait. Thank you guys for listening, and yeah, see you guys in a bit. Peace.